T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Sports Radio 610 presents Payne and Pendergast.
Payne and Pendergast with you on a Tuesday, 713-572-4610. The Broncos introduced Sean Payton yesterday. Of course, Sean Payton, who interviewed over Zoom for the Texans job. We'll get to that in just a little bit. One of the questions that they were asked, George Penner, the CEO, part of the Walmart family that owns the team, and George Payton, the GM of the football team, they were asked by one of the local media members about the report that they made a late push for D'Amico Ryans to be the head coach. Here's what the owner and the GM had to say about that.
Zach Stevens with DNVR. Sean, wanted to welcome you to Denver. And I have a question for Greg and George. There was a report shortly after that it came out that Sean was going to be the head coach here that said you were making a push for D'Amico right before that. Can you comment on that report?
I can comment. Yeah, that wasn't the case. Again, we met with a number of great candidates through the process, but once we locked in with Sean about 5 or 6 days before we got the trade done with the Saints, our focus was entirely on him and closing that.
Yeah, I would just say, you know, Sean was more complicated than the others, obviously. We would have had Sean done earlier, right, if we didn't have that other layer of the trade. And, you know, with the trade, I just want to you know, I did the trade with Mickey Loomis, and, you know, first class all the way. Mickey's been one of the top GMs in the league for the last, you know, 15 years or so, and just can't say enough about Mickey and the first class he showed to get the trade done. And the goal all along was not only to get Sean, but also to have it be win-win. You know, win for the Broncos, win for the Saints, and I think we accomplished that.
Okay, so the first voice you heard was the CEO slash owner of the team, co-owner of the team, Penner. And
George
the second,
Penner,
the George Penner.
Married into the Walmart money.
That's right.
Son of two sex therapists.
That's right.
I'm not making that up.
Stanford grad. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
But son of two sex therapists.
That's the big thing. Yes.
Yeah.
The son, if you need any advice on sex, Penner can get you to the right people.
go to Walmart is what you do.
That's right.
I'll tell you what. Believe it or not, those people there have had a lot of sex. They seriously have.
I need a hamper, a mop, some Twix bars, and some sex therapy. Yes. The second voice you heard was George Payton. Is there anything in there, Seth, in that answer that we just heard that would lend itself to some skepticism?
The interesting thing is you could either be skeptical of that or believe it, because that means that Sean Payton totally duped Colin Coward, and I think that's almost worth it, because Colin Coward was convinced that Sean Payton was coming back to Fox. And I just love that Colin Coward, who's been glowing about his best bud Sean Payton dishing and telling him everything over dinner and drinks, and I think feeling like he had the inside scoop on everything, may have been just completely 100% duped by Machiavelli and Sean Payton.
Could see where them pointing out that there was a long period of time where they honed in on Payton as their guy, but they had to complete a trade. I could see where they would be circling back to D'Amico just in case the Payton deal fell through.
They'd be idiots if they weren't.
Right.
They'd be really dumb if they weren't covering their bases. If something was taken 5 or 6 days, you don't sit there and just trust that it's all going to go well.
Yeah.
So, and this is where, honestly, whether it's Schefter or Rapoport, both of them doing their jobs in earnest, they're going to get different stories and then maybe get a little bit of the nuance wrong.
Yep.
And I think it, like, both guys might have been correct. Maybe they did have their sights set in on Peyton, and yet, but they also wanted to try to keep D'Amico in the fold.
Yeah.
And so I could see a situation where maybe the Broncos were still talking to D'Amico because they weren't sure about the trade yet for Peyton. And in that, during that interval, that's when D'Amico decided, hey guys, I'm going with Houston.
Yeah. You know?
So it didn't have to be this all or nothing, you know, hey, D'Amico, give us an answer now.
Yeah.
It really might have just been like, this is where we are in the process. And I think D'Amico, it's funny because earlier in the press conference, Sean Payton had said that when you're trying to get that first job, you're just scrambling, trying to take anything you can get. And that's when he took that Saints job, which at the time they were coming off of Katrina. It was just a mess. And they didn't have the history, obviously. Whereas with D'Amico looking for his first-time job, it's been quite the opposite, really. He was taking his time with everything. And I think with the Broncos, was probably taking that as a genuine conversation to get to know them and wasn't prepared to just leap as soon as they offered something, obviously, because he was very committed to the Texans by that point.
All right, so you and I have said since Peyton took that Denver job that it feels like a cash grab. If this feels like a cash grab by Peyton, it's not a great job right now, largely because of Russell Wilson. We'll get to Russ in a second. Boy, Peyton had something to say yesterday. They got people worked up about Russ. We'll get to that. I want to compare the two answers here. The answer of D'Amico Ryans, who's someone who I think genuinely wanted a job for specific reasons beyond just it's where he played. Like, D'Amico was very thoughtful in his answer about why the Texans job was his dream job. Let's listen to all the different elements here.
It's my dream job because, right, for me to be the head coach of a team that drafted me, I never could have imagined that ever, right? And my coaching career hasn't been long. I've been coaching for 6 years, and for it to turn around this quickly and to be in this position, it's a dream job because I'm here home in H-Town. That's a dream job, right? I get to work with Nick, with Cal, to build this team the right way, right? We have a young team, right? We have a lot of draft capital. We're excited to add even more talent to the team that we have, and it's a dream job because we can win here, and we're going to win here by collaborating, working together, building it the right way with the right people.
All right, so I thought that was a very thoughtful answer. A lot of just empirical meat and potatoes reasons, along with the emotional stuff that goes into it as well. Let's now compare that answer to this answer by Sean Payton. Let's see if Sean Payton can list several reasons why the Denver job was the right fit for him.
I appreciate the earlier question relative to, like, really good coaches, D'Amico and Houston. I had a chance to spend time with four clubs. I was fortunate, I think, enough to be in that position where I didn't take for granted there'd be an opportunity, but I knew there was serious interest in it with a lot of clubs. I had gone on an interview in Carolina. I'd gone on one in Arizona. The first day that I could be interviewed, the 17th, Greg, George, and Condi were there, like, breakfast time, the very first day. And I knew that meant something. Houston, we did a Zoom call. That was all of the process was fantastic. What I was looking for, I felt existed in one place, based on my exposure in with the other teams. And I also was in a position where, look, if it didn't work out, then, you know, we continue working at Fox and waiting for the next hiring cycle. This was the opportunity that I was interested in, and I know I was the coach they were interested in.
Okay, so his
best of four.
His reason, basically, his reason was Denver was lined up at his door the very first moment they were, by rule, allowed to be lined up at his door. They showed the most leg to Sean Payton is basically what it was.
And it was, whereas with D'Amico, this was his dream opportunity. With Sean Payton, This was the best of four available options,
yeah.
One of which was done via Zoom.
That answer was one cut above this.
I took this job simply because there's 32 of these in this league.
I mean, it wasn't that exactly, but it wasn't far from it.
Or wait, did he interview with all five, or did he mention four there?
He mentioned four, yeah. There was okay, one yeah, that, so. I forget which, I don't think Indianapolis requested
they
him.
Didn't yeah. talk, yeah. yeah. So, at least Cully was saying one of 32. Jeff Payton was saying this was one of four, and it met the requirements.
He didn't list a single reason why it's a good job.
He did the old, you know what we said you never do if you're complimenting somebody, like about maybe something like, you got the holes I like.
Pretty much.
Why do you love your wife? She got the parts I like.
Yeah.
I just, it works. What else am I going to do?
She was willing.
They don't allow it in this state. So I go with my wife. Yeah.
She was willing. I tell you.
Denver.
Honestly, the
whole thing is, he asked me what. Why did I sleep with the Broncos? Because they said yes.
Right.
So we did it.
They was
That's
in bed.
That's what happened.
Why'd I sleep with them? They was in the bed. They was the only one in the bed. And they were there at the first moment they was, by rule, allowed to be in the bed. And they had breakfast waiting for me, too. And I don't know if you looked at me lately, but as you can tell, I love me a good breakfast in the morning. I do love me some breakfast.
He's in the best shape of his life.
Sure he is. McClain. Yeah, that's not true.
What did he say? He's a workout maniac?
Oh, yeah. McClain said that. He's a workout maniac.
Like, how long's he been on Peyton's payroll?
He's had some suspect takes. That's his most suspect one ever. Sean Payton, workout maniac. What the hell?
He's working his tailor out.
Right.
Taylor's got carpal tunnel syndrome.
Altering
letting
suits.
These things out.
Yeah. Here, I think the big question people in Denver had was about fixing Russell Wilson. Sean Payton is brought there, and I feel like 90% of his job is he's got to get Russell Wilson right. They've got a lot invested in him. Here was Sean Payton when he was asked about Russell Wilson.
Here's what I know. I know he's a hard worker. I know he's an extremely hard worker. That's important. And I think you take that, you understand the skill set. He's won a lot of games in Seattle. We played him quite a bit just because we were both playoff teams in the NFC at that time. And then you go from there. And I think that's the same case, although it's a much more visible position, it's the same case and the same goal for us with every player on this roster. What do they do well? It's easy to point out what players don't do well, and there's certain coaches that tend to look at it that way, but I kind of was taught early on, hey, what is it they do well, and let's have them do those things.
The first thing about being smart is knowing what to do.
Let's look at what they do well.
Is knowing what to do.
Right.
I've been pouring over the tape trying to find what Russell Wilson still does well.
Yes.
Can you hit easy, wide open guys over the middle?
Oh my God.
Turns out no.
Dude.
So we're not going to try that.
similar to his answer about why the Denver job is a good job, basically, what does he see in Russell Wilson? He's a hard worker. That's what we got. He's a hard worker.
We're going to get him out there and do his mentee. Yeah, he still does simulated
high fives coming in. He simulates the high fives before a game, like walking on
right,
the field.
Visualization.
Yeah.
He does his simulated visualized football games very well.
Right.
So we're going to have him go out and do that. Maybe lead some seminars on that for the kids.
This is the one you've been waiting for. This was this was Sean Payton following the actual press conference. He conducted sort of a media scrum with several media members firing some follow-up questions to him. And one of the media members there asked about Russell Wilson's personal quarterbacks coach, who was given full access last year, sideline, things like that. Here was Sean Payton saying, no.
Coach, Russell Wilson had a personal coach, Jake Heaps, in the building with access who wasn't on the staff.
Yeah, I'm not too familiar with that.
How do you feel about players having their own people off the staff in the building access to players?
Yeah, that's foreign to me. That's not going to take place here. I mean, I'm unfamiliar with it, but our staff will be here, our players will be here, and that'll be it.
Okay, this is what I want to know. Supposedly Russell Wilson had his own parking spot. Supposedly Russell Wilson had his own office in the building.
Yeah. Yeah, it's not unheard of, but it's generally I don't know.
Have you ever been on a team where the quarterback had his own office?
No, but I know like Kirk Cousins had that in Washington, like a little spot.
That's
it was
not
like
helping.
A little corner cubby or something. Yeah, I know. Hey, if it's good enough for Kirk Cousins.
Right, exactly. Exactly.
Yeah, I don't like it, except the problem is that it's also Russell Wilson where it just fits in with everything else.
Yes.
Which is to say it doesn't fit in at all.
Yeah.
It's that he's just awkward in as many ways possible. If there's an awkward way to be around people, then Russell Wilson checks off that box. I was looking through some of the things that Russell Wilson did do well this year. So don't worry about it.
It shouldn't take long.
He didn't do a lot of things he used to do well, like kind of throwing out of structure. That's, you know, that used to be one of the best he had always been at. He was pretty mediocre at that this year, but still, you know, better than a lot of quarterbacks and younger quarterbacks in the league. His quick game, something that should help guys, like a Drew Brees, for instance, a shorter, older quarterback. His quick game really helped him as he got older. He was atrocious in the quick game. The thing Russell Wilson can still do well, don't worry about it. It's all good. The deep ball. So as long as you can just throw deep balls, you know, two out of three downs or so, you'll be fine. Okay.
Somebody's going to have to adapt. I don't know if people have been watching the Sean Payton offense the last 15 years.
Not to mention, I wonder if part of it, I'd have to go back and watch. I wonder if part of Russell Wilson's deep ball accuracy was kind of like Ben Roethlisberger's was the last couple of years, where he was good at throwing the deep ball because he sucked so bad at throwing the deep ball that they could take shot plays because people just wouldn't bother. They would just say like, oh, whatever, okay, Ben, you'll get one out of 60 plays in this game, and we'll give it to you. We're going to defend everything else for the rest of the time.
Oh my God! So yeah, this marriage, man, between Peyton and Russell Wilson. I wonder what the total is going to be on wins for Denver this year. Instead, if I put the total at 8.5, it's right down the middle in a 17-game season. Are they over 8.5 or under 8.5 this year?
Well, you can't depend on Sean Payton to be coming in and all of a sudden fixing a defense or anything, but this is already a good defense,
yep,
albeit with a different defensive coordinator, as Ejiro Evero.
Close enough. It's pretty good.
My name is Ejiro Evero.
Ejiro Evero, yeah.
Ejiro Evero.
Yep.
As Ejiro Evero departs for Carolina.
Carolina.
Did they hire a defensive coordinator in Denver yet?
I don't think so. No, yeah, I don't think so. Yeah.
So regardless, Sean Payton, notorious for having largely awful defenses until these last few years. But other than that, the only time they had a good defense was when they were paying people to injure the opponent.
Yeah.
So I would imagine the defense is going to get worse this year. Just on average, hard to sustain really good defense. So they'll probably get worse. And as far as offense goes, I think he'll be able to improve Russell Wilson over last year. I just don't know how much Russell Wilson has left in the tank.
I do too.
And I also wonder how, like, I wonder how Russell Wilson, like, how thick is his skin actually?
Mm-hmm.
You know, like he's the reports had always been that he was treated delicately in Seattle, and I don't think that that's like Sean Payton's not the monster that I think sometimes people assume he is based on his scowl, but I think he coaches people pretty hard.
Yeah, you know? Yeah, dude.
I don't think he's very sensitive to Drew. I don't think he was like coddling Drew Brees all those years.
I promise you, he's harder than Nathaniel Hackett, who got fired last year, and Russell floundered under. Like Nathaniel Hackett has a job because he was a good cuddly soft touch to Aaron Rodgers in Green Bay. You know, that's why he's gotten his last two jobs, because he's buddies with Aaron Rodgers. They're hoping to get him in New York.
I feel like Russell Wilson's going to be the Ted Lasso in this scenario, where he shows up at Sean Payton's office to watch film with him, and he's going to have little cookies.
Biscuits, biscuits with the boss.
I think he'll have graham crackers or something, because they do nap time afterwards, too. So you have graham crackers and then lay out on their mats and take a nap.
There you go. Gary Kubiak was on with the guys on Middays yesterday, In the Loop with Landry Locker and John Lopez. What did Gary Kubiak see in DeMeco that made him think he would be a good head coach? And what advice does he have for DeMeco Ryans as well? We will hear from the former Texans head coach, Gary Kubiak, next.
What up, y'all? It's your boy, Danny Green, 3-time NBA champ. You either rooted for me or rooted against me. Join myself and my co-host, Harrison Sanford, on the Inside the Green Room podcast.
It's a podcast that brings you never-before-told tales from the locker room, to candid interviews with basketball legends, to breakdowns of what's happening in the NBA right now. Whether you're a diehard fan or casual about your hoops, this podcast brings you the game like never before.
Follow Inside the Green Room on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Sports Radio 610 presents Payne and Pendergast.
All right, good to be with you, Payne and Pendergast, on a Tuesday. Gary Kubiak was on with the guys on In the Loop yesterday, former Texans head coach. What did you see, Gary, that told you D'Amico Ryans would be a head coach someday?
I think you run across players as coaches that you sit around the staff room and stuff and say, damn, he's going to be a great coach someday. But, you know, you never know if guys really, if that's something they want to do. When guys get out of football, they've been playing for so long and been a big part of their life, and guys, you know, have a little question sometime. Do I want to make that commitment to keep going? But I think we all saw that in D'Amico. We felt like he was a coach on the field when he played. And you got to give a lot of credit, really, to, like, Johnny Holland. I haven't heard Johnny mention much, but Johnny stayed after D'Amico. Kyle stayed after D'Amico. And they kind of talked him into saying, hey, D'Amico, you know, you got to give us a try. You know, come give it a look with us. And, you know, I'd be damned. He does it. He's a natural fit. He found the love for it. And what is it, 6 years later, he's a head coach in the NFL. So I think the biggest thing is everybody's just so proud of his path. And, coaching's a better place because somebody like D'Amico is a part of it.
Yeah, Johnny Holland, for those who don't know who Johnny Holland is, he was D'Amico's first position coach in the NFL. He was the Texans linebackers coach from 2006 to 2010. And then he has been in San Francisco. He was the linebackers coach when D'Amico got there. D'Amico became the linebackers coach. Johnny Holland slid over to outside linebackers, and he's still with the 49ers as a linebackers coach there. So he went in San Francisco. He went from D'Amico reporting to him to him reporting to D'Amico as the defensive coordinator.
Yeah, and I think that's it's interesting that Gary Kubiak said, I haven't heard his name mentioned too much. Well, geez, Gary, I think it's pretty obvious that Gary's sleeping in retirement because he listens to Clinton's show. He hasn't heard me mention multiple times Johnny Holland and how I actually went back and found some old interviews of Johnny Holland talking about drafting D'Amico Ryans and how he'd been stumping for him, you know, the proverbial standing up on the table saying how awesome this D'Amico Ryans was going to be. And he just, Holland never expected to get D'Amico because he had Gary Kubiak, offensive-minded head coach, and then all of a sudden they draft Mario Williams. So Holland at that point thought, well, for sure, there's no way in hell we're going to get D'Amico now because they'll go with an offensive player with their second pick. And then, bam! They got D'Amico Ryan. So I would not be surprised if Johnny Holland ends up on this staff somehow in the next couple of years. I think that D'Amico, I've just watched their interactions on the sideline. You know, I think those two are very close, Johnny Holland and D'Amico Ryan. He might end up I don't think Holland has been a coordinator.
He never has.
I do wonder if that might be one of these situations where maybe if D'Amico wants to still call plays but also have some of the load lifted from him, Johnny Holland might be a great either assistant head coach or assistant coordinator in some respect, or call him the defensive coordinator and work with him that way.
Yep, I would agree. Yeah, I'm looking at his bio, Seth, right now. Linebackers coach. Linebackers coach pretty much everywhere he's been. He's 5 years here with the Texans, and he's been all over the place, man. Dude, Johnny Holland has some world experience he can impart to guys for sure. Gary Kubiak saying that they had to stay after D'Amico to get that done. What should D'Amico be aware of when putting his staff together, Coach?
Well, probably the biggest mistakes you make are when you get in too big of a hurry. You know, you think, golly, you feel like you're behind already. You know, the season's been over for a month, and we need to get going, and you can make some mistakes if you get in too big a hurry. You know, I always told Bob McNair when Bob gave me the job, you know, everybody who does interviews wants to talk about, you know, who's coming with you, how about your staff. And I remember telling Bob, you know, the most important thing is whether or not I'm the right fit for your organization. We'll figure that other part out. We'll take our time. We'll get good coaches. And I think that's the way to approach it. Now, you know, I mean, I'm sure D'Amico's got a lot of people tugging on him right now. But, you know, right now it's time to just settle into your routine, know what you want, talk to a lot of people. There's a lot of people out there. And just make sure you find people with the same vision you have. So D'Amico's always been very patient in his life and what he wants to do, and I'm sure he'll approach this the same way.
You know, it's funny about Gary putting a staff together. I just thought back about that. Gary did a great job of finding the dudes at the bottom end of the pipeline. You know, go look around the league right now and how many guys who came through the building during the Kubiak era, Seth. You know, the Mike McDaniels of the world. Kyle Shanahan was the offensive coordinator here and the wide receivers coach for a few years. Robert Saleh, I know, missing a few guys there. It's funny, though, as somebody who, you know, covered and rooted for those teams in the Kubiak era, when I think about him putting his staff together, you know, now I think about that, those younger coaches that were in the building. When I think of Kubiak putting his staff together, though, I think about the defensive coordinator hires until Wade Phillips, and that was shaky.
Right. Richard Smith was hired. He was hired on February 2nd of that year. So they didn't spend a whole lot of time.
Yeah.
And I don't think, like, those two are, I think, you know, Kubiak and Richard Smith are friends and have known each other for a long, long time. So I don't think that,
Probably had him handpicked. Yeah.
Well, I don't know. Either that or he's thinking, like, man, we sure were in a hurry to hire Richard to get a defensive coordinator.
Oh, now with that answer. Yeah.
And we ended up hiring Richard Smith, who was just, from my perspective, not from Gary's perspective, but from my perspective, like one of my least favorite coaches ever in the history of football.
Yeah.
Like, made me hate the game of football. And he had awful defenses for a couple years. So, he had had a couple good performances as a defense coordinator in Miami, but it was, well, Nick Saban, defensive-minded head coach, was his boss.
Yeah.
So, that the cautionary tale there is don't hire Richard Smith. Well, don't hire Frank Bush. Don't rush into something like that. But there is a little bit of a timeline. I mean, teams are only so generous in granting interviews for so long before they start saying, like, oh, listen, all right, we can't be losing our whole staff here in late February.
Yep. Gary Kubiak asked yesterday by John and Landry, what's the most difficult thing for a head coach in his first year?
You know, I try not to bother him too much, but I gave him a piece of advice that I got a long time ago, right after he was hired. I said, D'Amico, I said, remember this. I said, somebody told me this a long time ago, and I remember the piece of advice was, it'll get done. And at the time, I thought, what the hell does that mean, you know? And I said, D'Amico, carry that with you because you're going to feel overwhelmed. There's so much to do. Just take your time. Be patient in what you're doing. Things will get done. Make sure you surround yourself with great people. And that's the most important thing right now, surrounding himself with great people. The excitement of the town, the excitement of the new, all of that stuff's going to push him forward. But just being, you know, being really set on, you know, getting the good people around him so he can go to work.
Yeah, and I think that the it's hard right now. I think, like, everything Kubiak is saying there is true. And yet, for us fans, there's a part where, look, okay, yes, that's all true in theory, and yet there is a very unproven element here, so we do want to know exactly what it's going to look like on offense, and okay, it's going to get done, but exactly how well is it going to get done and when? Because I don't want to wait too long.
I want nuggets. Give me nuggets. I want nuggets.
Yeah, give me nuggets. Give me some nuggets.
Yes.
I think that, it's hard to... It's hard to preach patience right now. I think everybody's raring to go. I told you yesterday, we're in that honeymoon period where, for the most part, there are no bad decisions to be made, and we're all cool with that. I almost don't want D'Amico to start hiring people because then we'll start having things to criticize him about. And yet at the same time, if he doesn't hire them, then we'll criticize him for not making bad decisions soon enough. You need to start making bad decisions now.
I know. That's what we need. We need nuggets.
Every of these other coaches are making plenty of bad decisions.
That's right.
And you're just sitting there not making bad decisions.
Catch up,
Come on, man.
Let's go. Payne and Pendergast with you. Hey, quick reminder, we are giving away tickets to see the Zach Brown Band at the Houston Livestock Show and Rodeo on March 5th. We're doing that all day today, twice during our show, twice during In the Loop, and twice during the drive this afternoon. Your chance to win, your first chance to win today will be sometime between now and the top of the hour. So stick around, listen to some headlines in the next segment. And sometime between now and 8 o'clock, you'll get a chance to win. Caller number 5 is going to be on their way to see Zach Brown Band, which on my power rankings of shows I want to go to is at the tippy top. That's the one I want to go to, March 5th. It's a Sunday. So be listening for that. 713-572-4610, the phone number. That's the phone number on the Trailer Wheel and Frame text page. All right, headlines up next. Sean Payton introduced to the folks in Denver. Brian Flores has found a job. The Texans have requested permission to speak to at least one defensive coordinator candidate. And oh, by the way, the sports owners here in town did something yesterday that has me and my people, the degenerate gamblers, very, very happy. We will talk about that as well. We'll get into headlines next. Stay there. You're listening to Payne and Pendergast.
Live from the Twin Peaks studios, Sports Radio 610 presents Payne and Pendergast.
All right, we'll get to headlines in just a second. We're going to give away Zach Brown Band tickets to the rodeo between now and the top of the hour. Steven Silas was pissed last night. Rockets head coach. They followed up their defensive effort. Well, he doesn't get angry very often. I think that's why people are...
I know. It's just like, oh, boy.
Well, let's play the audio. Yeah.
Everybody watch out now. I know. It is just sounded funny.
Yeah. So they gave up 140 points last night to Sacramento.
That's an improvement.
Which sadly was a 13-point improvement over their effort against OKC on Saturday when they gave up 153 points.
These guys don't get enough credit for not at least allowing record offense.
For really buckling down and showing better effort on Monday than they did on Saturday, yeah.
Well, no, and they haven't let up. I mean, what's the record for points scored in an NBA game?
I don't know.
A lot of people say, like, oh, this is the worst defense they've ever seen in basketball. And that's just it's objectively not true. It's
factually inaccurate, yeah. Here was Steven Silas. We've got a few cuts from him here. Saying last night, no defensive effort.
It was getting into the body, getting over the screen, being in help, sprinting the closeouts, doing what we're supposed to do, acting as if it doesn't matter. It matters.
All right, he has leaned on the youth of this team as an excuse for some of the mistakes that they make or some of the bad nights that they have. He did that when he was responding to the John Wall podcast interview a couple of weeks ago. He said, hey, we're a young team and, you know, these are growing pains. He says, this was not about youth.
These are the lessons we have to learn, I guess, and all that stuff, but that's not right. What we did tonight on that floor was not right. It's not right.
You hear him banging on the desk. That was not right. He said, they aren't competing.
Are we going out there and doing everything that we can possibly do to win the game? Or are we just going out there and playing the game? That's what it is.
All right, last.
It's disappointing.
Last one, just unsolicited, calls out the effort one more time before getting up and walking out of the press conference.
They're not giving the effort on the defensive end. They're not getting after it like they're supposed to. They're not getting into their man and fighting over and helping each other. They're not doing what they're supposed to do.
So that Seth, you're the former athlete. I'm just the guy watching here. That looks like a coach who is on his very last string. Like most coaches, I think probably that's almost the last resort to completely just called out his team there. He didn't take any responsibility for it.
Yeah, that's... I don't know if, as one of our listeners says, too little, too late. If this is the time when all of a sudden you're going to become a hard ass about guys not showing effort or playing defense,
that ship sailed. Then,
yeah. It's like, oh, now I get the picture. I didn't realize now that I have zero fear of you. Now I'm totally going to be scared. It's like putting a shark fin on a goldfish here at this point.
Well,
I don't think that.
That's a great analogy.
So I've seen various people complain about Silas not getting fired, and I don't know. Have you guys paid attention to the last 30 or 40 years of sports? The Rockets are in a pretty good position right now in terms of your odds of securing a good draft pick. You know,
it's the only reasonable explanation for him still being the head coach of the basketball team.
It's funny. I was thinking about it, and I was reading an article by the Rockets. I honestly can't remember who was writing it, but I remember just the level of disgust in his writing about exactly what was going on with the team right now and how come they weren't doing things to rectify it. And I guess it's because you're beyond the point of no return at this point, where whatever damage to the culture has been done, and you got to manage. What do you do when tanking? And this was this is the worst kind of tank, because they were forced into it by the whims of a guy that apparently they're all but too ready to court to come back next year. Oh boy, look at what a mess we are. Please come back. I don't know, man. I don't want to see the Rockets cuckolded by James Harden that way. So it is what it is at this point.
Yeah, they haven't been given defensive effort in a while. I don't think it's a great look either that the few games that Silas has missed this year that have been coached by John Lucas, they look like a different team when John Lucas is coaching them. They're directionless right now. They've got the one veteran guy they have who's part of the rotation is Eric Gordon, and he has looked like a prisoner for the last 2 years. Anytime you look at him on the bench, he looks miserable. I think he's trying his best. He's not forcing his way out of here like James Harden did. He doesn't have the clout that James Harden had, obviously. But they're rudderless, and the future star that they've attached their hopes to is Jalen Green, who just has such a passive, kind of almost immature personality. I don't mean immature in a bad way. I don't think he's a bad kid. But I saw an interview with him after the game last night, and there's no fire there. You know what I mean?
Well, yeah, and honestly, I guess I'm being a little too cavalier about it, because it's not like you're playing out the last 20 games of the season or something. I shouldn't say that the damage to the culture has already been done and it can't get any worse. I think it can get worse, and habits can get ingrained, and you certainly don't want that. I think about like the Miami Heat, where Pat Riley had always been the guy that, you know, really kind of ruled with an iron fist in a lot of ways in terms of holding guys to a certain standard. And I think that allowed Eric Spoelstra as a young coach to have the success he did. I don't know if Spoelstra with a loosey-goosey owner or somebody else would have had nearly the same success, because he didn't have that backing of a general manager but a general manager who, you know, just flat out was not going to accept certain things. And I think for LeBron James too, even though he chafed against that eventually, I think it was really good for LeBron James to have a Pat Riley and structure like that, where right now they clearly don't have that. Almost to the point where it has to be a complete house cleaning at some point.
Yeah. I feel like the only guy who's respected in that building
amongst
the players and by the players is John Lucas.
Yeah.
That's it. You know, like other than that, like that's a team the last two nights it has basically said, we just don't feel like playing for this guy. Like, I mean, you give up 153 and 140. And Sacramento's a good basketball team. They're a really good offensive basketball team. It's 140 points, man, on the heels of giving up .153. So,
isn't it weird that I consider, like, in my mind, I said Pat Riley is the owner, even though in my mind I know he's not the owner, and yet I think of that as like his team.
Yeah. I think he was, team president, I think, might have been his title. Yeah. That was clearly his, that was his culture, for
right,
sure.
Right.
Yeah.
But the actual owner of the Heat is like a total Miami-looking dude.
Probably good that he delegated to Pat Riley then.
He said, yeah, yeah. Oh, no, yeah. If he were in charge, like, if he were in charge, it would be like what you have right now in Houston, except with a lot more salsa dancing.
Yeah.
A lot more with South Beach, basically.
Beach night.
Add what we have in Houston right now, and then, or take what you have in Houston with the Rockets, and then add to it South Beach.
Yes.
And imagine the beautiful disaster that would be.
Would have been fun. I would say that. All right. We're going to give away tickets to the rodeo between now and the top of the hour. Let's get to some headlines.
Payne and Pendergast with today's headlines, brought to you by BaywayJeep.com.
All right. The big news in the NFL yesterday. Well, it's Super Bowl week. Nothing really coming out of the Super Bowl media night that I saw, Seth. Did you see anything salacious or words or bulletin board material come out of the opening night?
Yes, what? Yes, I got distracted earlier because I saw this headline that said that Nick Sirianni still has a chip on his shoulder from Andy Reid not retaining him in Kansas City.
That's right.
And I saw it, and it was classic. Somebody asked him, hey, do you have a chip on your shoulder? And he said, well, yeah, you know, naturally anybody's going to have a chip on a shoulder when you're not retained and you use that. But then he went on to give, like, a dissertation on how awesome Andy Reid is as a person and how it obviously was nothing personal or anything like that. It just wasn't it was headline porn. Yeah, it sucked me in. Other than that, no.
Yeah, you want to play 6 degrees of separation with the Texans on this particular story you're talking about?
Yeah.
Nick Sirianni was the wide receivers coach for the previous regime in Kansas City before Andy Reid got there. Well, Andy Reid already had his own wide receivers coach that he was going to bring from Philadelphia, who happened to be his assistant head coach as well. Nick Sirianni was replaced by?
The most important thing about football is the football.
Yeah.
Oh. Okay, I'd have a chip on my shoulder.
David Culley replaced Nick Sirianni.
Okay, Sirianni should have a damn big chip on his shoulder.
Necessary context for you?
Okay, all right, yeah. He's got a chip
smart,
on his shoulder.
Tough, selfless.
Yeah.
Selfless.
That's remember, too, it goes to show you like how like even really good football coaches sometimes have blind spots, for instance. If we're going 6 degrees of separation, with the Ravens, one of the questions was always, well, hey, okay, Greg Roman, the offensive coordinator, seems to do really well at getting the most out of quarterbacks who are running a threat, but doesn't seem to develop them as passers. So the other day, remember, I said, well, you know, maybe Greg Roman just needs a passing game coordinator. And then I thought, wait a second. He did have a passing game coordinator. David Culley.
Sure did.
In 2020.
Right.
And yeah. So even John Harbaugh, who's a very good football coach, at one point decided that maybe David Culley was the thing they needed to take Lamar Jackson to the top. And then you wonder why Lamar Jackson might get a little bit frustrated about things and the lack of the development of the offense.
David Culley replaced Nick Sirianni.
If we got to go 3 and out and punt it, we're good.
Yeah, that's a passing game coordinator right there. I get what he was saying. It doesn't make it any less funny.
No, it's the enthusiasm with which it's embraced.
Yeah.
That's always with a coach. Like, I don't, never quite – try not to sound so gleeful when you talk about how it's A-okay to punt.
Right. Ben, hit that one more time.
If we got to go 3 and out and punt it, we're good.
I'm just picturing Davis Mills throwing like 10 yards short of the sticks on 3rd and 18 – and Davis Mills coming to the bench and David Culley running up, getting a running start and chest bumping him like those assistants do in college. Like, wait, well, get the punt, Davis.
That was the same thing with Schaub. Remember when Schaub said that the nice thing about having Leckler was that, hey, if you know it was 3rd and long, you didn't have to push it to convert necessarily because you got Shane Leckler. And we're all looking at each other like, no, if you have Shane Leckler, that means by all means, don't try to scratch out a draw for an extra 5 or 6 yards. You've got Shane freaking Leckler.
Yes.
Just go ahead and go for it. If you don't get it, Shane will make up that extra 5 or 6 yards.
Right.
My God.
He doesn't need the 6 yard check down on 3rd and 15. He doesn't need those yards.
Now we got it. Now we got one of those Australian kickers that it's all the rage these days.
Yes,
and you know, when you got these guys, same thing. You can
been their best player.
Place that football down. I know. Who's the best player on the Texans right now
at their job? Cam
Laramie
Johnson.
Tunsil.
Yeah, Laramie Tunsil. Laramie Tunsil. Yeah.
Damian Pierce. You can't say he's one of the best. He has to make it a full season, all that stuff and
sure.
everything, but he's one of the better. I got insulted the other day when Colin Coward's little minion there said, you know, if you ask a Texans fan who the best player on the team is, could they even say?
And oh, like, Jason McIntyre?
Yeah, he's kind of. Most of them would say, that's not a very accurate impression. I feel like most people would say Laremy Tunsil or Damian Pierce.
Tunsil's got the accolades. I mean, he was at the Pro Bowl games throwing water balloons with guys. I mean, that
Jalen
means you're the
Petrie's
best.
Not there yet. He showed a whole lot of promise as a rookie. And then hopefully this year with D'Amico and whichever assistants he brings in, hopefully he gets taken to an even higher level.
That's a good, easy to consume topic. Who will be the next non-Tunsil Pro Bowler for the Texans? Of these young players, like who
of the
will,
young players? Of the, yeah. I wanted to say Jerry Hughes, but he's not young.
Yeah,
he's 35, or yeah, he will be 35.
Okay, if you had to pick, okay, from let's just keep it simple. From the 2022 rookie class, who would you? The none of them have made the Pro Bowl. Who would you pick to be the first Pro Bowler out of that class?
Damian Pierce is like the easiest and obvious one because he's got name brand appeal.
Mm-hmm.
I think like he's got fantasy football appeal. To where, even if the team isn't doing great, I think a lot of guys, if Damian Pierce has a good season, especially if they bring in a Coop Shanahan standing
yes.
system,
bingo.
Then there's a good chance that he'll be that next guy, that next mid to late round or undrafted running back that goes off and has a and goes off. Who goes off and goes off?
Yep.
Of the draft picks last year, Christian Harris. Okay, I don't think Christian Harris will be the first. To be an all-star, but I feel like he has a really good chance at becoming a perennial all-star
mm-hmm.
alongside Jalen Petrie's a tough one, except that I think he's going to be used kind of like Hufanga was in San Francisco. So Jalen Petrie might be the first to make it to the Pro Bowl
of
the young guys from last year.
He's got some buzz, too. Yeah. He had some holes in his game his rookie year, which I think he'll work on. Most of them are tackling-related. But Petrie's getting named to a lot of these all-rookie teams because they just look at his numbers and they go, oh, my God, he's the first rookie in the history of the league to have 5 interceptions and over 125 tackles. He's amazing. Yeah. By the way, you're listening to KLT and KLT HD2 and Odyssey Station. We're going to give away Zach Brown Band rodeo tickets here in the next couple of minutes. Sean Payton met with the media yesterday. He was introduced in Denver as the Denver Broncos' next head coach, and he was asked about his most important task, fixing Russell Wilson.
Here's what I know. I know he's a hard worker. I know he's an extremely hard worker. That's important. And I think you take that, you understand the skill set. He's won a lot of games in Seattle. We played him quite a bit just because we were both playoff teams in the NFC at that time. And then you go from there. And I think that's the same case, although it's a much more visible position, it's the same case and the same goal for us with every player on this roster. What do they do well? It's easy to point out what players don't do well, and there's certain coaches that tend to look at it that way, but I kind of was taught early on, hey, what is it they do well, and let's have them do those things.
it's hard to point out exactly what Russell Wilson does well anymore. And some of the things that he should be really working on and getting better at as he ages, he's really doesn't even want to do well, it seems, like the quick game. And I think about Sean Payton's experience with Drew Brees in New Orleans was that he was a shorter quarterback, but he was so money with the timing and the rhythm and the quick game. He was never, you know, wasn't a great deep ball thrower like Russell Wilson is. So they really had to do all that stuff. And Russell Wilson is just atrocious at that. You know, he's always been a guy that holds onto the ball a long time, that tries to work outside of structure. Because sometimes that is best when he works outside of structure. And that doesn't always age well as a quarterback. So I don't know if it's as simple as saying, okay, what does Russell Wilson do well? He throws a hell of a deep ball, and when he can actually stay alive outside the pocket, he does pretty well, but not nearly as well as he used to. Okay, you really should be developing and refining some kind of a quick game and a short game.
Yeah.
I don't know if Wilson's got it in him. I just don't know.
What he does well does not overlap with what Sean Payton appears to like to coach based on his time in New Orleans. We'll get to Payton's next cut here about Russ, which this is the one that has everybody talking. But first, let's give away some tickets to the rodeo. Zach Brown Band. 713-572-4610. Caller number 5, going to win a 4-pack of tickets to see Zach Brown Band at the Houston Livestock Show and Rodeo. March the 5th, it's a Sunday. Keep listening all day. If you're not the winner this time, maybe you win next time. We're going to do it again in the 9 o'clock hour. In the Loop and The Drive are going to do it twice during their show today. We'll do it again on Thursday this week as well. 713-572-4610. And caller number 5 is going to win those tickets to see Zach Brown Band play Chicken Fried live on March 5th. Sean Payton was asked following the press conference in sort of a media scrum, a little more informal, some follow-up questions by the media. Russell Wilson evidently has a private quarterbacks coach, which is not uncommon for players.
Right.
I don't know how common it is for that particular personal private coach to have access to the facility, but under the watchful eye of Sean Payton, that will not be happening in Denver.
Coach, Russell Wilson had a personal coach, Jake Hughes, in the building with access who wasn't on the staff.
Yeah, I'm not too familiar with that.
How do you feel about players having their own people off the staff in the building access to players?
Yeah, that's foreign to me. That's not going to take place here. I mean, I'm unfamiliar with it, but our staff will be here, our players will be here, and that'll be it.
Oh, this is it's got shades of a little bit of a TB12 situation.
Yeah, there. Alex Guerrero.
When Tom Brady's personal trainer was disallowed from the facility, and there was some kind of rift between maybe Brady and the trainers on the team and all of that. This is the right time to do this. It's the appropriate time to do it is to say, hey, this is just our policy.
Right.
If you try to, you know, kind of like it was in New England, if you try to all of a sudden strip privileges away after somebody kind of just snuck the privileges in, because that's how it happens. Brady shows up with his personal trainer and nobody really says anything because it's Brady. And then all of a sudden you realize, like, wait, why is this personal trainer? Oh, okay, this personal trainer's in meetings now, apparently. And he's questioning what our athletic trainers are saying about it. And it gets to be a thing. So I think that right now Sean Payton comes in and flat out.
Yeah.
He can allow it later, but he's not going to allow it at the onset. It's something that's going to have to be proven to him.
There's a new sheriff in town, and he ain't respecting old arrangements, as they say on The Sopranos. This is it's a new regime.
Yeah, you come in hard. That's just like a substitute teacher, a coach, stepmother. I don't know. You come in hard.
Right.
You don't let those stepkids eat the same good name brand cereal that your own biological children are eating. No.
Program director.
That's right. You stick them under the staircase, Harry Potter style,
yep.
And that's where they'll be happy until they prove that they've earned your love.
It really is interesting to look at how much Denver bent over backwards for Russell Wilson when he got there, with him having played not a single game yet. I mentioned just in passing, he's got his own parking spot. Someone texted in, probably in the know, who said, yeah, JJ had his own parking spot. It was as close as the coaches, blah, blah, blah. My guess is JJ got that over time, not his first year with the team.
Well, they also, I might be wrong on this. I think it was something kind of based on seniority. So
yeah, that would make sense.
Necessarily like, hey, this player and this player alone has it, but I'll double check that.
The biggest thing the Broncos did for Russell Wilson, where I'm like, okay, you might not want to wait it on that. You might not want it to wait on that.
Yeah.
Is the contract. Like they gave him $250 million and he hadn't played a game, and maybe that was a wink wink part of the trade.
Yeah.
You know, because Russell Wilson did have some control over where he was going to go, so maybe he approved the trade to Denver under the condition that they were going to give him a contract extension. This has been an unmitigated disaster so far for Denver.
You know, as far as J.J. Watts, somebody else had mentioned that he had his own little sleeping area there in the locker room or in the equipment room. Listen, that is in the spot where Todd Wade, Zach Wiegert, and I would drink beer during training camp in back in the day. So J.J. just repurposed an old area for, I guess you could argue, being lazy as opposed to, you know, forming camaraderie with your teammates.
Yeah.
So, yeah. We'd only do it during training camp. It wasn't like we were doing it Wednesday before practice.
Right. Yeah. No, they've shown the footage of his sleep space that he has there. It's not a 5-star room at the Ritz or anything.
It was our little beer cubby.
It's like under a table or something.
It's this little nook back in the equipment room, like between the lines of laundry and everything. There wasn't anything special about it other than that the laundry kind of absorbed sound.
Were you breaking rules when you were drinking beer in that particular area?
No, but it was also, you know, away from prying security cameras and everything. You know, you just, yeah.
Do you have a cooler?
No, we weren't having burlesque shows.
But I was just wondering, like, is there a rule about alcohol in the building? And were you a
probably. Yeah. So we were breaking rules.
Right.
Yeah.
Did someone bring a cooler? You have a fridge back there? How'd that go? Like,
I don't know.
Yeah.
It was all Wiegert's thing.
I'm intrigued by this. Yeah.
We had a cooler.
Okay. Gotcha.
I wasn't as much. It was Todd Wade and Zach Wiegert more than anything. It was one of those things. It's kind of like when you start a club out when you're kids and, you know, there's a few gung-ho members and everybody else kind of falls. You have like a no girls club or something.
Right.
And I just kind of got, I couldn't keep up with those guys.
Yeah.
Those guys were old school NFL offensive linemen.
They drank.
They could guzzle beer and then just be fine the next day. Where I'm like, guys, I feel a little, I'm not running my wind sprints as fast as I want to. Yeah.
I feel gassy.
All right, football fans, the NFL draft is almost here, and the free Odyssey app brings you the latest coverage from the biggest sports radio stations across the country. Which players will help your team the most? Who will make a draft day trade? Will they be ready for week one? The local conversations about the team you love. All streaming free right here on the Odyssey app. AUDACY. Download it today.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of four lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.